This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. Good morning to you. Good morning, Rico. Had a pretty good game last night for Game 1 of the World Series. I thought it was entertaining.
Certainly was an entertaining baseball game. The Dodgers are just, they're tremendous. They really are. Kershaw was sensational. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, David. I'm doing all right. Had a rough night, but I'll explain more around 10:30 for observations.
Why so rough?
Well, I can't tell you now. I got to save it for observations. I don't want to. I mean, that's called the tease in the business.
Oh, that's the hour and 45-minute tease you're going to
play with.
Exactly
right. Oh, yeah.
It's quite the tease.
Little soft touch, little tease, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's quite
leave with
tease.
A smile on your face.
It's tantric, really. I mean, what you're doing.
They call me Sting. Call me Sting. You can call me Sting today.
It's the tantric tease is what you're doing in the radio world. So, I mean, Chris touched on a good baseball game. Did you find it curious that they left Glasnow in the game?
Yes.
When he was clearly struggling? I mean,
you take
Morton out at 65 pitches, leaving Glasnow in for 111?
Well, it's game one, right? It almost felt like they realized with as well as Kershaw was throwing in how, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the Rays, the entire postseason, you know, outside of your favorite player or Rice Aroney, I mean, they haven't hit. They really haven't hit. I mean, and they strike out a ton. It was almost like, you know, we'll lose this battle to win the war.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to start unloading my bullpen because it doesn't feel like we have a real good chance to win this game anyway. That's how it felt. Because, you watch him during that inning. His velocity
was bad,
but his secondary stuff was garbage.
Well, Kevin Cash talked about him trying to go out there and throw 104 miles per hour. It was clear that early on that kid was overthrowing the baseball. I thought both him and Kershaw early on were overthrowing the baseball. The difference was Kershaw was able to right himself at the end of that first inning and able to get out of having a couple of base runners on, and Tyler Glasnow wasn't. And he didn't get a feel for the game. He wasn't able to get his command, and eventually Cody Bellinger made him pay for it. And that was the beginning of the end for him, but also for the Rays in that game.
But that doesn't beat you. Like, I mean, you got to expect. I mean, the fact that the Dodgers have, you know, an MVP batting sixth in their lineup is a testament to how deep their lineup is, right?
They're a great team. They really are. I thought they were going to win the series before it started yesterday. And watching game one, I feel nothing but confident that they're going to win that series. I think from beginning to end, I think they've been the best team in baseball. I mean, there's really not much of a weakness on that Dodgers team at all.
No, I mean, the bullpen, the back end of their bullpen can be a little bit sketchy at times. I mean, that really is. I mean, if in the fact that Kershaw in the postseason hasn't been the Kershaw we're used to seeing in the regular season, but their lineup, their defense, I mean, the versatility of their lineup, it's one of the best in baseball. And on top of that, if you're Tyler Glasnow, when it kills you, it's the cliche in baseball, leadoff walks kill you. Leadoff walks will always come back to haunt you. And that's exactly what happened. And you sprinkle in the fact that you had one of the best players in baseball, Mookie Betts. Again,
stealing three bases in one inning, essentially.
He's awesome.
But that's analytics out the window, man. This is the time where you have to put pressure on the other team. In these high-pressure moments, if you can put pressure on the opposing team, you can force them to make plays, force them to make mistakes. And that's exactly what Mookie Betts did in that. He forced the action. And he got a great jump on Max Muncy's, you know, hard grounder to first, and he forced Yandy Diaz to make a good throw, and he didn't make a good throw. And there's a run.
And then after that, you had back-to-back RBI base hits by Will Smith and Chris Taylor, too. To tack on more runs.
And that was it. Night termite.
Yeah. I thought it was a huge double play ball that Gonzalez got off of Zunino in that seventh inning to get out of it. Because it felt like the Rays were trying to mount a little bit of a comeback at that point.
Yeah, they were looking for an inning at that point. And by the way, Zunino behind the plate is...
He's really good.
He's good.
I thought Austin Barnes was good behind the plate for the Dodgers, too.
It's glaring how much, like, the difference between watching Gary Sanchez catch and then watching someone like Zunino catch.
And
Zunino's a big dude.
Fans. What did you say?
Like, it's not like a Zunino. Like, Zunino's a big dude.
He's huge.
Like, he's like 6'2". I think they said like 235, 240.
No, he's a
big
huge
man.
Guy.
But he's agile back there, man.
It's terrific.
Kept everything in front of him. He gave you a chance.
Have to do.
You know what the biggest... Here watching that game last night and watching Mookie Betts for me, and I know, you know, Stanton had some big home runs and everything else, but I was sitting there thinking about the Yankees this morning. Stanton kills them. Like, Stanton, as far as the flexibility of your lineup, hurts you. And on top of that, the flexibility with your payroll kills you. Like, I mean, you get the Yankees, in order to get where they want to get, like, either they're going to have to trade, I don't know who ends up being. It could be Andujar, whatever. Like, you would imagine they need someone else in their starting rotation, correct?
Mm-hmm.
At least one more. But how much money are they going to be willing to spend? You're going to have to sign LeMahieu. Right? You already got Cole. Well, you, don't you have to, though?
Yeah, it feels like it, but yeah, there's kind of rumblings that they might not. I mean, are you gonna? And I love LeMahieu. I think he's sensational. But are you gonna give him $23 million a year?
I would.
Okay, but I think that's a real decision the Yankees are gonna have to wrestle with, though.
Well, I think the other decision too is you have to decide, is Gleyber Torres gonna be your shortstop moving forward?
I don't think he can be.
Okay, so if that's the case too, now what do you do with shortstop? Do you decide? I mean, do you make the decision to maybe trade Luke Voit? Because, I mean, his value is at an all-time high.
Put LeMahieu at first. Torres back to second.
I think the rotation will be fine. I mean, I would like somebody like, and Severino kills you too. Like, not having a healthy Severino kills you. Because you don't have, I mean, you got Gerrit Cole and then a bunch of question marks. Because you got to imagine, Davey Garcia is going to be in the rotation.
Sure.
We all like him.
But you don't know that he's going to be a stud in year two. He's still a young kid.
Exactly right. And they didn't give him the opportunity to prove it. That's why game two would have been so important. If all of a sudden he pitches 5-6 innings and he looks good, that makes you feel good going into next season. Montgomery was good. You'll have no Hap. I can't imagine they're going to bring back Paxton.
No.
If you can get Tanaka for the right money, you'd like to bring Tanaka back. And then we'll see what happens with Severino and then Herman. But I don't know, man. I know people like Stanton, and he was a former NL MVP. But he's, if he, at this age, for how many years you're going to have to pay him as much money as if he can only DH?
Right. He can't play.
He's a specialist, man.
Yeah. This is coming off a sensational postseason for him, too.
Yeah, but do you want to be paying? That's like paying. I mean, do you want to pay your field goal kicker $30 million a year?
No,
that's all he does.
Kicks long field goals, though.
No, I know, but the only way you get him in the lineup is to DH him.
Yeah,
that's it. So how do you give Jimmy? How do you give Aaron Judge a break? How do you give him? I mean, if Gary Sanchez is your catcher, how do you give him a break?
If you want to play Stanton, none of those other guys are afforded a break.
And you can't get Andujar in the lineup.
Nope. And Frazier didn't even play in big spots this postseason.
No, they went. I mean, he had a pinch hit opportunity. He went with Mike Ford. So I don't know how, I don't know how you get around that. I don't, because I don't know how I don't know how willing. And, you know, after watching what Tampa does, spending. I mean, I think their payroll this season was $28 million.
I think Kershaw makes more than the entire Rays staff. The entirety of it.
No, I wouldn't doubt that. But when you start, I mean, if you're going to use the luxury tax as a soft cap, and it appears that's what Hal and the Yankees are going to do, then I don't know how you justify, and you're stuck with it because he's not opting out, paying a guy that's your DH that much money. It doesn't make any sense. The guy you pay that much money is a guy like Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
That can affect the game. And I mean, he can run the bases. Defensively, he's great. You saw how, I mean, he didn't have to hit. To have an impact on a game.
The plays in Game 7 against the Braves were sensational. Nothing short of sensational. There's not a weakness in his game. And he's a little guy, but he's a great right fielder. He runs the bases. He hits for power. He hits for average. He gets on base. Like, there's not a weakness in his game. Nothing.
No. There's nothing. Like, there is nothing right now at the moment that you would change with Mookie Betts.
No.
The way he plays baseball. I mean, he's a five-tool baseball player. He can do anything. But that's who you would want to spend all that money on. And now you got a bunch of guys coming up in arbitration and everything else. I don't know, man. I don't know what the Yankees do moving forward. I really don't.
I think it's interesting this offseason. They have a lot of decisions to make.
I mean, you're starting to get to the point. We talked about their window where guys weren't making much money.
Like, that's about
rubber,
done.
Rubber's starting to meet road here.
Yep. You're going to have to pay all these guys.
So, I don't know where they go. And I just don't. It doesn't make any sense to me. And they did it. I get it. Maybe it was an overreaction because they didn't get Ohtani. But I mean, to be locked in to a 30-year-old DH for the next 7 years
at that kind of money, yeah.
Especially if you're not going to be the big bad Yankees anymore, right? Like, you're not going to just go spend it.
Big bad Mets now.
Well, I mean that. And the other thing I thought last night, listening to them break down the Dodgers, that's what you hope the Mets end up being.
Of course.
You take the analytics and everything else, you know, how to develop players and everything else, you know, finding, you know, diamonds in the rough like they used to do, like they do in Tampa, and you bring that all of a sudden to the Dodgers with that kind of payroll.
And you spend the money, right. And when Mookie Betts is available, you make a deal for him, you sign him to a long-term extension. Like that. I mean, the Mets are one step closer to Steve Cohen now.
Yeah, he got passed, which is good. It seems like that's going smoothly.
It's going to happen. But think about this. I was reading today. He makes more than... So he's going to be the richest owner in baseball. 2, 3, and 4 combined don't have as much money as he does. The Mets are going to have the richest owner in baseball by three times, guys.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing is that you use those resources in order to develop the infrastructure so you can get the most out of your players. Like when you add players to the organization, whether it's in free agency or whether it's through the draft, the most important thing is you get the most out of those players. And in order to do that, you have to have the right infrastructure in place. That means the right support staff, being able to integrate the analytics with solid coaching, and then understanding how you can get the guys to apply what you're trying to teach them to the game, to bring that to the games, and help that put your team in position to have success and ultimately get back into the postseason. That's what you're looking to do. And so you just got to – it's not enough to just have money and just throw it around. You got to make sure that you build the infrastructure. That means continuing to develop the scouting department, continuing to do all the little things, all the little upgrades that you're talking about doing, even putting the cameras in Citi Field so you can use that as a tool to educate your players on what they're doing well, what they're not doing so well. All of those little things matter. You're trying to look for improvements within the margin like Rick always talks about. Like, and when you had the Wilpons, it didn't seem like they were willing to do those things. But now that you got an owner with deep pockets, that feels like it's going to be the reality for the Mets moving forward. And that's a good thing.
It's a great thing. But why can't you do both? Like, why can't you be the team that's
going to
be
both.
Rays-esque and
no, they're
going to
do both.
They are going to do both.
The Dodgers do both. I mean, it's exactly what the Dodgers do.
Be that. Do that. Make that the blueprint. That the game plan. So if it's Trevor Bauer and you want to pay him $45 million for 1 year, you know what? Let's do it. You want to bring LeMahieu in and bring like Realmuto? I want to spend to the nines, and I want to put the infrastructure in place like you're talking about.
Yeah, but I think the other thing, too, which is nice, which will be something that we haven't had here with the Mets, is that if you do make a mistake, you can
cover it up like the Yankees do, like an Ellsbury.
Exactly right.
Right? You make a mistake, blows up in your face. You know what? We have so much money, we can outspend that mistake.
Yeah. I mean, what you want to do is you want to, draft well, develop players. Now, because you have the money, you have the opportunity that once you do develop the players and they do become, like, you're not going to be in the same situation as, like, the Cleveland Indians are in, where all of a sudden, they got these guys who they've developed, but now they need big money and you can't afford to pay them.
Right.
Now, because you have deep pockets, you develop, and you can afford to keep your own guys. And then, if you need to spend the money to add a piece or two, you have that ability. I mean, that's what you want.
It's great.
I would rather not just go out and spend willy-nilly. Like, I don't need, a bunch of hired assassins all the time. I don't need that.
I'm not opposed to that, though.
No, but I like the foundation the foundation of this team to be, homegrown that you've developed. And then when you need to add pieces, you can add pieces.
Well, that's fine. But now, I mean, maybe Trevor Bauer would be a huge addition.
Yeah, but this is different, though. That's what I'm saying long term. But if initially you want to make a splash, like if you're Steve Cohen, you want to make a splash, I agree with you. You want to go outside Trevor Bauer. Like, there's enough talent. We've already said that. Like, the Mets had plenty of talent to be a playoff team.
If the Marlins can make the playoffs, the Mets could have made the playoffs.
I mean, to have 16 teams, eight in your league, and not make the playoffs, not even come close to making the playoffs, is an utter embarrassment.
Yeah, it was a travesty, really.
Right? I mean, it really was. Like, it's an embarrassment is what it was.
They were the most talented team not to make the playoffs. I think that's fair to say. I think that's a fair assessment.
Does that make you feel good or bad?
No, it makes me feel bad, but I mean, you have the opportunity now with new ownership. If Sandy Alderson involved, I mean, you get rid of Brody Van Wagenen if they want to, I personally, because, having been around the atmosphere that is the New York Mets, kind of like do your own thing, like I would much prefer seeing someone like a Buck Showalter hired, like someone like that, that's going to come in, instant credibility, hold guys accountable, set a standard. That's what they need. That's how you get, it's like what the Cowboys are dealing with right now. They got plenty of talent. The culture sucks. It's a country club. That's what it is. Got a bunch of guys that it's tough to eat because they're full, because they all got paid, and they're not giving max effort.
It's sensational.
I know you love it.
Oh, God.
But I think that's what's going on. I really believe that's what goes on with the Mets, is that it's a bunch of guys just kind of doing their own thing. And they don't have...
That's really not okay.
No, it isn't okay. But that's how you underachieve. Okay. But that's the reason why you would underachieve with that much talent.
And they're disjointed. Like, what kind of team are they? They're a subpar defensive team. Their bullpen is mediocre. They're kind of built on starting pitching, but then they have some real holes in starting pitching. They're a mess.
Yeah, they weren't well built. I mean, we know.
Is that a surprise when you talk about the general manager being a former agent?
No. So. I mean, they are worse now than when he took over.
Oh, clearly. And the sad part about it is he mortgaged parts of your future
the
now.
To win now. Because remember what he called
underachieved. The 2 years that he's been the general manager, they haven't come close to realizing the expectations that he set when he took the job.
Right. we're going to win now and in the future is what he told us. Well,
fluid to the top.
The now never happened. All the way.
Lighter fluid.
Over. Yeah.
Burn the whole damn thing down.
Well, you know what? It's going to change moving forward here. Let's go to Sean in Jersey and we'll switch over to the NFL.
Canty, that should have been the follow-up. Now, could you please, what kind of fluid are we talking about?
Yes, yes. Excuse me, sir.
Could you identify the fluid?
Yes. Sean in Jersey, lead us off, and then we'll get into the NFL. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, good morning, DTR.
What's up, Sean?
An idea that I haven't heard been floated around, but I think it's a pretty good idea. I want to see what you guys think about it. What about trying Stanton at first base? And then
You're not going to put Stanton at first base, no. I mean, they already told you, too. They do not want him out in the field. They'd probably prefer not to have him run the bases
even at
this point.
Wow.
You can't just stick anyone at first base. You can't do it. I mean, you already have...
You got Luke Voit at first base. Why are you going to mess with that?
No, you're not. And I mean, if it's not Luke Voit and you decide to trade Luke Voit and you put, you re-sign DJ LeMahieu, I mean, that's...
You put him at first. Yeah,
I don't mind that either.
That's the beauty of DJ LeMahieu, though. You can play him at first, second, or third. Like, the versatility that he gives you defensively. And then, I mean, you put him anywhere in your lineup, he's gonna be productive. Like, I like him as the leadoff batter because he's going to put the ball in play. He's going to get on base. But, I mean, it doesn't matter where you put DJ LeMahieu in the field or in your lineup. He's going to be a really good baseball player, which
he's
is why
terrific.
I think you got to resign him. But to Rick's point earlier, man, I just as much as we didn't need the Stanton signing, I just don't feel like Stanton is the reason why this team can't get over the hump. You know what I'm saying? I think the biggest issue for this team going into the offseason is addressing the starting pitching rotation. That's got to be the biggest issue.
Yeah, do you do that, though? But my point is, how do you do that? Like, if you don't...
You're going to have to spend money. You're going to have to spend money.
I don't know what their appetite is to do that.
I don't either, but they're going to have to. If they want to compete for a championship, you're going to have to spend money because we don't know what Severino is going to be. We don't know the status of Domingo Germán. I mean, you like what you saw from Davey Garcia, but he's going to be a back of the rotation kind of guy. Same with Jordan Montgomery. So, I mean, you got to figure out a way to have those guys slotting in at the second and third spots behind Garrett Cole, and we
absolutely
just don't know who
do.
Those guys are going
to
be.
But do you need to do it now? Like, do you need to do it this offseason, or you can wait, watch the season play out, and then make a deal for one of those
guys? Well, it just depends on what your timeline is. If you're trying to compete for a championship while you still have these guys under team control at relatively friendly rates, then that's probably a situation where you're going to have a little more urgency behind doing it now. As opposed to waiting until later.
I'm saying I can wait till the All-Star break. Like, the Yankees are going to be a postseason team.
Oh, you're talking about, whether you do it before the season starts or, at the trade deadline. I get what you're saying. I'm not sure. But I think we don't have all of the information. Like, if I felt good about Luis Severino being ready to roll, sometime in the middle of the summer, then maybe I wait until the trade deadline. But if his rehab isn't going, according to plan, if things aren't on schedule, then maybe that factors into me being more aggressive this offseason. I just think that the Yankees have to address the starting pitching. Like, I know it sounds like a broken record. We keep saying it every single winter. But to me, that was obvious in the ALDS against the Rays. Like, their starting pitching was better than ours. And their bullpen was better than ours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the part of it as a Yankees fan. I feel like that's what we need to focus on. Because Stanton was phenomenal in the postseason. He was great.
He certainly was. Does Marcus Stroman interest you?
No, I'm all set on him. I'm good on him.
Why are you laughing?
I'm good on him.
Trevor Bauer's not going to the Yankees.
I'm good on him.
There might be a trade.
Trevor Bauer feels like a Met to me. I don't know why.
It's going to be a trade. It feels like the Yankees, if they're going to make a move for a starting pitcher, it's going to be a trade. Because they got guys right now.
Which I'm not opposed to.
What's
wrong?
They don't have any room for.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get rid of Andujar, right? You have to make that decision.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to.
The only reason you didn't do it last year, last offseason, is because you didn't know what Gio Urshela really was. Like, you liked it, but you weren't sure. And so he followed it up with another solid year in 2020. So now you know that's going to be your third baseman, period. So you can move on from Andujar because you can't put him out in the outfield.
No.
So.
Well, you didn't realize that Clint Frazier would be this good, too. So now that, I mean, there really is no spot for him.
But can we make him an everyday player already?
Well, I think he's at that point. I mean,
okay, well, let's do that.
Depending on what they want to do with Gardner, you'll have Hicks in center field, and then you'll have Judge and Wright. I just don't like, listen, Stanton was great in the postseason. I just personally, my own personal opinion, is if you're not going to go out and be the big bad Yankees and spend all this money to be hamstrung by a guy who's only going to be your DH for the next 7 years, making $30 million a year.
You're not wrong. But he didn't cost you this postseason.
Agreed.
I'm not saying he cost you the postseason. I didn't say that at all. I'm saying moving forward, does he now all of a sudden, hinder your ability to make the necessary moves to get you over the hump?
Probably. But I don't think there's a lot you can do. Like he's locked in.
Yeah. I understand that, but it limits your opportunity. It limits your options now. Like, does this all of a sudden now, because you realize, okay, what do we need? Our bullpen wasn't nearly as good as we thought it was going to be. Maybe we move out of Vino, but we don't have the depth that we like, so we need to spend some money there. We got a bunch of guys coming up in ARB, so Judge is going to get a raise. If we keep Gary Sanchez, he's going to get a raise.
Sure, yep.
Glaber's going to get it. Like, everyone's going to get raises. Now, do we say, okay, we need starting pitching more than we need to keep DJ LeMahieu because I'm paying Stanton $30 million because I want to stay under a certain number?
You got to keep LeMahieu, though. You got
to. You have to.
I don't think that's a foregone conclusion, though. I really don't.
He's been one of the best players in baseball over the last 2 years.
I agree with you, but is he one of the best players in baseball at $25 million a year over 4 years?
Well, listen, you're worth what everyone... You're worth whatever someone is willing to pay you.
Correct.
So if someone out there is willing to give him a sweetheart deal, you're the Yankees, are you just going to match it, or you have to be not conservative, but you have to be careful with it?
That's the question, though. But he is hitting free agency at the perfect time. Age, I don't mean age wise. I just mean by, like, we're so focused on the analytics that to have a guy, in your lineup like DJ LeMahieu is what a lot of these teams need.
And I think his age is actually going to work to help the Yankees be able to keep him.
What is he, 32?
He's 33, I think.
33?
Yeah. So that'll be working for the Yankees. So you just hope, you hope that he likes it here, and you hope that Brian Cashman is willing to spend to keep him. And then you hope that contract doesn't keep you from doing some of the other things that you think the team needs to do this offseason in order to improve. But, something's got to be done. Something about the approach that they've had the last few years hasn't been working. I mean, we're talking about them being ousted, in the ALDS 2 out of the last 3 years? So, something about that has to change.
I think a lot of this year was bad luck. I think a lot of this year was bad luck, though. I hate to give him an out, but I think that Cashman really felt like he thought he addressed the pitching. Like, he had the pitching staff where, Cole was the missing piece. Mm-hmm. And then with Paxton
got hurt.
Yeah, Paxton went down.
Herman with his issues. Because think about it. If they're healthy... If their rotation is healthy, and all of a sudden
If Paxton is healthy, you don't see J-Hap. Thing that happened in game two doesn't – that's not even a thing. You're giving the ball to James Paxton. Go out and pitch 5-6 innings.
And then the loss of Tommy Canley getting hurt was huge. Huge for them. Yeah.
But it's still the Yankees. And the expectation is that you're going to overcome whatever stands in your way.
No, but I think to what we're talking about, and Kay's been saying the same thing, if you're Hal Steinbrenner, and it feels like this entire time, since Hal has taken over the team, it feels like – and he said it a couple different times. You can win a championship without outspending $200 million, right? Like, it feels like that's what he wants his legacy to be. Like, what will separate him from his dad is he doesn't want to hear people saying he bought a championship. Like, we can do it a different way. We'll spend the money, but we want to do analytics and everything else to win a championship that way.
If Steve Cohen goes out and spends $400 million and the Mets win a championship, I'd be thrilled.
No, I would too. But I'm saying, that's the feeling I get.
Yeah, I agree with you. So
Okay, but if that's the case.
I don't know how true it is.
Okay, but if that's the case, and you're watching Tampa do what they're doing, spending the money that they're spending, what's your appetite to go out and spend even more than you're already spending? For what? To be disappointed
again?
It hasn't worked yet. At some point it has to pay off.
Looks like it's about to pay off for the Dodgers.
Right.
And we'll see what happens. I don't know what they... We'll have to, especially with, no fans and everything else, how much this season has affected.
Yeah, they may not want to go out and spend huge money this offseason.
Yeah, but, just naturally, just how it works. You're going to end up spending, more money this
season. Well, all the guys that are going to get more money just because they're, eligible for arbitration is going to be a considerable amount. If you want to keep LeMahieu, that's going to go up a ton.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you're spending more money. Paxton will come off the books. Probably Tanaka will come off the books.
Hap
will come off the books. But there's real decisions. This is a very, I think for the Mets and the Yankees, very intriguing off seasons.
Yeah.
I would agree with that, but I feel like there's going to be more change that happens over in Flushing than it happens in the Bronx.
Yeah, but I think the difference is I think there's more trepidation with the Yankees than there's more excitement with the Mets.
Right. Oh, no, I think people are thrilled.
There's probably some, I would be a little bit concerned whether or not the Yankees are going to re-sign DJ LeMahieu.
I think you have to be. Hope he stays. Even though I don't like the Yankees, I love watching him play every day.
Dave, you're right. It's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to re-sign him, but to me it just seems like it's so obvious that they should. I mean, you can make the argument that the guy has been the MVP of the team the last couple of years. It was a great signing by Cash. It was a great deal.
What were they paying him?
What is it, 2 years, $24 million, $12 million a year?
Yeah, so it's a, I mean, listen, I love him, but it's a great signing at 2 years, 24. Is it a great signing at 4 years and 100?
Is it going to cost that much to keep him?
I think in that range.
It's going to cost you $25 million a year?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay, we'll see.
Four for 90? I mean, you're going to pay something like that?
We'll see. We'll see what it ends up being. And who knows, man? Maybe the guy likes it here. Maybe he likes it here.
Maybe he does.
Yeah.
I hope he stays. I really do. I love watching him play
too.
Baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is his, yeah, but you got to realize, too, this is his last, I mean, this is his last bite.
He's 32.
He'll be 32, yeah.
So he's 32 now, so he'll 4 years, 30. This is his last legitimate deal. And you could even argue that the last deal he was on wasn't a huge deal.
No, it wasn't a huge deal at all. I mean, that was like, I'm going to go play for the Yankees, make $12 million and just prove to
myself. Prove myself, and then I'll get a big deal, and it's worked out exactly as he wants.
Yep.
If the Yankees want him, they'll keep him.
Yeah, I would imagine that's the case. I mean, if I'm Aaron Boone, I'm going to war to keep DJ LeMahieu. It's not even a question. Like, this is the guy that has to stay. I mean, he's been the heart.
Such a good player.
He's been the heart and soul of your team over the last 2 years.
Yep,
he really has. He probably should have won the MVP last year.
It's a great player. Let's go to Jay and Dick Sills. Jay, you're next up on 98.7.
How you doing, morning, fellas?
What's up, Jay?
What's up, guys? I know you guys are harping on the pitching for the Yankee staff, and I don't disagree with you guys on that, but I think you guys are making it more than it really is, because in the do-or-die games, when it came down to it, it wasn't the pitching that beat the Yankees. It was the bats. So they're concerned with just hitting bombs and hitting home runs.
But that's all the Rays are doing, man. But time out. That's all the Rays are doing. That's all the Rays have done the entire postseason, is hit home runs or strike out. That's it. Outside of a Rosarena, all they've done is hit home runs or strike out.
Okay, but in that last game, three hits for the Yankees?
Three hits for the Rays.
All the Rays did was hit home runs in that game, too.
I understand that, but I'm saying that all
you don't understand that. You don't understand that, because you keep going back to the same tired thing that it was the lineup. The Rays are doing exactly what the Yankees have done, and they're in the World Series. You got beat by the Rays because your defense is not as good and your bullpen wasn't as deep.
Correct.
That's why you got beat.
That's right.
Because you had to go from Gerrit Cole
and the starting pitching in game two was awful.
Was a joke.
So I understand, but it has not. So you're saying that has nothing to do with the bats. When they lost to the Astros, it had nothing to do with the bats.
No, that's part of it, but that's not the only reason.
I agree.
The bats in the past have been a problem. The bats in the past have been a problem. I don't think the bats were the number one culprit this postseason.
No, it was pitching. It was pitching.
I think a lack of trust in who was going to start game two.
Yeah, I think decision-making, too.
The Fakakta plan, where you didn't even give Davey Garcia an opportunity. He went to J-Hap. He was uncomfortable. I mean, listen to what Kevin Cash says. Hey, Kevin, how come this works? Well, because everyone buys in. The second that game was over, the first thing out of J-Hap's mouth was, I wasn't really happy with the decision. The second you hear that as a manager, this is the second you change the plan.
Right.
I don't care what analytics say.
That's right.
You've been a player before. You know how this works. It made no sense at all.
Nope.
And then you get to game five, and you decide, this is how it's going to be set up. And because you trusted no one, you'd already used Chad Green, so he looked like he was unavailable. You were going to go straight from Cole to Britton to Chapman.
Which you did.
And you overextended those guys.
Especially because, I mean, you went... Why didn't Britton get that last out? It was a lefty. He was rolling. Like, you need to bring Chapman in that situation?
In the seventh.
And then it was all righties. Like, if you had a righty in your bullpen, like, who was going to pitch extras? If it went to extra
innings? That's what I said the day after. God knows. I don't know what you would have done.
Yeah, what was their strength that ended up turning to be one of their weaknesses in the postseason was the bullpen.
Yeah, their bullpen, for the guys they trusted, was great, but they did not have enough arms that they trusted.
Well, they only trusted three guys.
Right.
That was it.
And when you have to play five consecutive days, it's not enough.
Yeah, Major League Baseball screwed everyone, too, by not telling everyone that they're going to play straight days like that in the postseason.
Because that definitely changes roster construction.
But you won game one, man. You won game one. Why not let Davey Garcia just pitch or J-Hap pitch game two?
They outthought themselves.
But if you lose, you lose.
They got too cute.
Oh, my God.
The 2020 Yankees will be remembered for that game two for a long time.
Oh, 100%.
It was mismanagement.
Yeah, 100%.
It really was.
There's nothing that they can say, Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, that's going to get the fan base off of that one.
Nope. It was mismanagement.
But didn't that help? But isn't that, like, look back. Like, just in I mean, even go back to when the Red Sox won the World Series. You know, how many different guys? And Evaldi, he stepped up and, you know, how he pitched and, you know, the way he did in tough spots. But, I mean, Brock Holt, the game. See, it's always.
Steve Pierce.
Yeah, but it always feels like it's like that one, you know, it's one or two guys that you don't expect that all of a sudden play above the X's and O's and help you to win a game or a championship. Like, why not that moment just give Davey Garcia an opportunity? Maybe he surprises you. At least give him, like, did anyone expect a Rosarena to be as good as he's been this postseason?
Nope. People didn't even know who he was before the postseason.
Exactly right. Like, Clayton Kershaw, I mean, historically one of the best regular season pitchers in the history of the sport. Not as good in the postseason. It's not a foregone conclusion that what you do in the regular season is what you're going to do in the postseason.
No.
You got to give guys opportunities.
And sometimes guys that you're unfamiliar with turn into heroes in the postseason.
Instead of hamstringing. But you hamstrung both guys.
It was bad managing.
I think it was, I mean, it was.
Or whatever. It was bad, you know, organizational decision making or managing or however you want to pigeonhole.
Yeah, but don't lie. But don't lie to my face and tell me that Aaron Boone's not a puppet. I got more respect for Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone, the player, if the manager tried to sell him that load of crap, would say there's no way. We're not doing it. The second Jay Happ reacts the way that Jay Happ reacted, Aaron Boone knows this is not a good idea.
Yep. And they went through with it anyway.
Yeah, and it failed.
And it's going to haunt you all offseason.
Yep.
It will. All right, 800-919-37.
Still don't like Jay Happ, though.
7-6, you shouldn't. You shouldn't.
Go out there and pitch, man.
Right. Go out there and take care of business, and he couldn't do it. And now the World Series, of course, tonight on 98.7 ESPN Radio, presented by AutoZone. Catch all the action of Game 2 tonight after Carlin on 98.7 ESPN and the ESPN app. And just to let you all know, before we go to our next break, Chris is going to tell us about Straight Talk Wireless. We're not there yet, but Santiago, just so you're appropriately prepared.
You feel better now that you did that, Dave? You feel better?
Yeah.
You're giving Santi a hard time? Poor guy's back there by himself in the control room? That's what you want to do? Such a bad guy, Dave Rothenberg.
How so?
I don't know why you want to be a bad guy today. You on one today, man.
Maybe I'm on edge for the Giants game tomorrow night.
I don't know why you would be. I thought you said the Giants already sucked the life out of you.
They stink, but you know what? They have a meaningful game. You as bad as they are, and they are, we can't deny the fact that they have a meaningful game tomorrow night.
Okay, well, wake me up when Daniel Jones beats an NFC East opponent not named the Washington football
team. So if the Giants win tomorrow, when we get into studio or wherever we are on Friday and we do this show, you will be singing a different tune on Friday morning.
Well, I hope that's the case, Dave. I hope that's the case. I really do. But I think I got enough of a sample size and I've seen enough turnovers from Daniel Jones to realize if he keeps doing that, this team is not going to have a shot at being able to win many more games this season. At some point, it's got to change. The kid's got 32 turnovers in 18 games. Is that good?
No, it's terrible.
Oh, okay, it's terrible. Now, he's going up against a pass defense in the Eagles that only has two interceptions. So hopefully he can take advantage of some of those matchups on the back end and we'll see what happens with Sterling Shepard. But, I mean, the one thing I will say is a big concern for this Giants team and for Daniel Jones specifically is this Eagles pass rush because they can still get after the quarterback. So that's the one thing that you got to watch going into this game, short week, Thursday night on the road.
Wouldn't you imagine, though, if the Giants were to win this game, it would be Daniel Jones protecting the football, but it would be the defense probably?
Yeah, you'd probably win it similarly, hopefully not as stressful and awful, but similarly to how you beat Washington.
Yeah, the Washington football team, which
yes,
you're going to have to wait at least another year apparently. For them to get a new name.
Which is stupid. What?
That makes no sense.
I don't understand what they're doing, man. Pick a name and roll with it. Is it really that hard?
No.
Apparently. It's almost sad when you look at like the spreads and stuff and it's like the football team.
So yeah. Unless we're using a racial slur, we have a hard time coming up with a team name?
Yeah, pretty much.
It can be tricky. Oh, okay. It can be tricky.
Pretty much.
Okay. Not sure what that says about your ownership.
The lack of creativity. Get past the racial slurs.
I mean, you can't have like a contest. Like, think of the name. One person, you have a million tweets.
Or just
one
talk to the guy that's already copyrighted like 20 names and say, hey, man, which one of these you think fits the team the best?
Yeah. Got all the good ones. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man.
It really is. But again, back to the Giants tomorrow. So when you look at Philadelphia, no Miles Sanders, no Zach Ertz. May not have Lane Johnson. I mean, this is a pedestrian team to begin with, and they're all banged up, Rick.
Oh, their offensive line is a mess. Yeah. I mean, this is the rash of injuries. I mean, that the Eagles have dealt with. I mean, it's crazy, but they find a way. I mean, you know, they fight till the very end, and we talked about it yesterday. I mean, they played two of the best defenses in the National Football League. Now, they didn't win games, but they still found a way to score 57 points.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's – you're going to have your hands full. I don't care how many injuries. Like, Doug Peterson,
I agree
that coaching
you.
Staff finds a way to get the job done. No excuses. And it's not like – here's the thing, though. Even with the decimated offensive line, it's not like the strength of the Giants is their ability to get after quarterback.
No, it's not.
So it's like, I mean, what?
Although a strip sack did change the game for them against Washington.
Now he's
on Sunday.
Out. Now your best defensive player's out.
Yeah.
Tate Crowder's out.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. But to your point, Rick, Doug Peterson is creative. Like, he'll have some wrinkles in there that the Giants defense hasn't seen. And I got to think that he'll have a package of plays for Jalen Hurts and try to test the Giants a little bit that way, using him on some wildcat yep. type of situations. Getting them out on the perimeter of the defense, stressing the defense that way. Like, you got to think that he's going to be a big part of whatever you're going to do. Because on a short week, you talk about a lack of time to prepare. Like, that would be one of the things that could make it difficult on a defense if you hadn't really had a lot of practice reps on the field with that kind of stuff. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, you still got Travis Fulgham out there, and he's had a pretty good month in terms of his ability to impact that offense. So, we'll see what happens. But
yeah, they're not talentless. Their quarterback is still – I still think he's pretty
no,
good.
I mean, even when they were talentless at the end of last year, Carson Wentz dragged that team kicking and screaming. Where'd they win? Four of the last five games?
Yeah.
To get to the postseason?
Mm-hmm.
And then carried over all that momentum to this season.
No, well, he got knocked the hell out by Davion Clowney.
I think
that's what
point.
It was. That momentum ran into Clowney.
Yeah, momentum does not carry. Let's go to some of the calls. Yeah. People excited for this Giants game. I'm not going to let the two of you poo-poo what the Giants are. There are 1-5 teams fighting for a division.
It's a meaningful game.
Clawing, scratching for a division championship.
This is important for your coaching staff. This is important for your young head coach. This is important that your team is still in it. And there were some positives. Listen, I mean, the fact of the matter is the Washington football team is not a very good team. And
they're terrible.
You won by a point.
The Giants are terrible.
It was a scoop and score, and it was a failed two-point conversion.
Yeah, you won because Ron Rivera decided he was going to go for two rather than kick the extra point and go into the overtime.
I will say this, though. One of the positives for me that came out of that game was the offensive line did a pretty good job.
Yes. With Matt Parrott as left tackle, the offensive line did look better.
Against a good front.
So, yeah, so that's a positive thing. They're moving in the right direction.
Yep, hopefully. Let's go to some of these excited Giants calls. Dempsey in the Bronx. Dempsey, you're next up on 98.7.
Hi, good morning, CC Humpty. I don't know why you guys are upset. I love cheeky games.
Well, good morning, Dempsey. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I said I love cheeky Dave when he's happy about the Giants. We're tomorrow we could be first in the division. He's excited. I don't know why you guys are poo-pooing him and the Giants. I love it. You guys
because you know what's going to happen.
About the injury.
No, because you know what's going to happen.
Come on.
Well, you know what's going to happen. He goes from not showering. You know, sitting on his couch, eating his feelings. You know, they've killed me. I'm dying inside. To all of a sudden, you know, 1-5, and we got a meaningful game on Thursday. He's going to pump himself all up. God forbid they lose. We'll have no one to drive the show on Friday. He'll be useless.
But that's what the Giants do. They do the same thing to me. I live off my emotions with the Giants. Win
yeah,
or
but
lose,
you don't have to drive the show.
The week.
Yeah, but you don't have to drive the show on Friday. Dave does.
We love him at the show. But you guys already mentioned a rash of the injuries for the Eagles. I think a big thing about the Giants, though, is Sterling Shepard going to be back?
Sounds like it. But you could lose. But Slayton, what's going on with Slayton?
Yeah, I'm not sure with that. I have him in one of my fantasy teams. He says it's just he has a Q on his name, but they haven't given any updates of it. I don't know. I have a little bit of optimism with this Giants team or whatever. I think I've been saying it on all the different stations for the last 4 weeks. I think this Giants defense is a lot better than advertised. They play well up to their talent level. They pay above their talent level, I think, for how they play. You know, I think they're going to make a lot of noise, and I think they're going to take this game.
I hope
the Giants defense is solid. The Giants defense ain't going to be the reason that you lose a lot of games. Although it was the reason why you lost to the backup quarterback Nick Mullins and the 49ers. But, I mean, outside of that, the Giants defense has been solid. It's been good.
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, you let Andy Dalton
they're
come
better,
in there.
They're a lot better than we thought they would be coming into this
season.
They're
better than we thought they would be, yes. And the offense is way less than we thought they would be.
Agreed.
I mean, we remember this offseason, guys, we talked about the Giants offense and we went through all of it. It's like, God, they're going to be good. And they have Saquon and they have Shepard and it's Engram and it's Tate and, you know, all this talent. Daniel Jones year two.
And Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator. Yeah. The Giants offense is supposed to be a lot better than it is right now. And this is not all on Saquon Barkley being injured in the second game.
No, let's be honest. The Giants offense stinks.
Yeah, the Giants offense is bad.
Right? I mean, it's just not good. Let's go to Ryan in Middlesex. Ryan, you're next up on 98.7.
Guys, help me as a Giants fan. How do we approach this game? The common reaction with fans is every win just pushes us farther back in the draft. But guess what? We've had top picks, and where has that gotten us? In fact, look at the teams who are in the top every year. They're drafting, you know, in the 20s and, you know, in Seattle's and Kansas City's of the world, and they're in the top. So my question to you guys is, why not go win some games? Why not sneak into the playoffs at 7-9? Let me enjoy a playoff game that we get blown out. And so what if we're drafting 14th, 15th? Because I'm watching draft picks from the second, third, fourth, and fifth rounds play better than first round picks. So what do you guys think? Is it?
Well, you had the fourth overall.
I don't want to say tank, but what do you think?
Well, you had the fourth overall pick. It doesn't look like you made the right selection anyway. So, I mean, you took Andrew Thomas, and it looks like Mekhi Becton was probably the guy to take. No, I mean, this is
– any one of those other three tackles would have been the guy to take in comparison to what Andrew Thomas has given the Giants. Any one of them.
Yeah, Chris, you know this too. I mean, yeah, it's – you know, when you're rebuilding, it's great to have, you know, draft picks and everything else. But more importantly, when you have a new head coach and you're trying to change the culture inside that building, winning is more important. If this team could find a way after an 0-5 start to somehow sneak into the play, that would be huge for Joe.
Oh, my God. It would change the entire trajectory of the organization. You'd feel great about it.
Well, you got to learn how to win. You got to learn how to win. It's a relatively young team, but you do have some solid veterans on that team. Like, I love the addition of Drane Bradbury. He has been as good as advertised. Like, that's money well spent. Like, Dave Gettleman actually got that one right.
Martinez has been good, too.
Terrific.
Yeah, Martinez has been good. Fackrell has been good.
Yes, he has.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, those additions have been good on the defensive side of the ball. Now you'll see what happens the rest of the way. But if this young team can figure out how to win games, then that's when you feel like you got something. And most importantly, if Daniel Jones can figure out how to stop turning over the football, I think the Giants will have more opportunities for wins as we move into the second half of the season.
Yeah, there's your key.
Yeah.
And that's going to define more than this season. Like, if he continues to turn it over and they continue to lose games and you go 2-14 or 3-13 and he's bad, I think you have to have that conversation of what are we going to do?
Yeah, I think that's going to define Dave Gettleman's tenure as the New York Giants general manager. Like, if Daniel Jones cuts out the turnovers and we see more of the flashes that we've seen, like the 50-yard run last week, or the dime that he threw to Darius Slayton. Like, if we see more of those plays, if that becomes more consistent and he takes care of the football, then the Giants would have felt like they found their franchise quarterback. And I got to think, if he does those things, that's going to equate to this team winning more games. Now, are they going to go to the playoffs? I don't think so. But the biggest thing is answering the question of whether or not you got a franchise quarterback.
Do you think there's any way six wins could win the division?
I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility.
I mean, you could win six games.
I don't.
I mean, you're laughing, Dave. I mean, the Cowboys seem like they're a complete mess. I mean,
they
Eagles, it seems like it's someone new. It's one or two of their better players each week gets hurt.
Football team is bad.
Yeah, I mean, is it possible?
I mean, Philly's, 1-4-1?
Mm-hmm.
Which is another reason why. Why is Ron Rivera not just, even if you tie, it's better than losing?
Exactly. That's why I don't understand.
It was a terrible decision.
What are you doing, man?
But you know what he's doing. Rico, you know what he's doing, though, man.
It's because
he decided to bench Dwayne Haskins and put him at third string and start Kyle Allen. He's trying to make every decision to support the one that he made a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, this was not handing the ball off to Marshawn Lynch.
That's exactly what it was, because we want Russell Wilson to be Super Bowl MVP and pay him a huge contract.
Yep.
I'm Riverboat Ron. Listen, watch me roar is what it was. Right? I don't know.
He's, all of a sudden, he's Katy Perry?
Yeah, pretty much.
Why would you bet on Kyle Allen? Of all the people, you're going to risk it all on Kyle Allen?
And they were nowhere near to succeeding on that play. No,
it was bad.
Is your head in the right place here, Rick? I mean, are you really focused on hockey trivia day?
I'm dialed in.
Okay. All right, let's bring it. And if you're not in a great mood, that will change when you hear the excitement in the voice of one Andy from America. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR.
So good.
How are you?
Never disappoints. It never disappoints.
Andy, are you ever in a bad mood?
I'm talking to the smartest sports show guys
in the country. Why would I be in a bad mood?
You bring up valid points, Andy, valid points.
You know, but I am feeling a little feisty, Dave, and because of that, we're going to talk about the bruisers in hockey, the team's all-time leading penalty minutes. Starting with the Boston Bruins, who is their career leader in penalty minutes?
Ooh, is that O'Reilly?
This got to be
O'Reilly?
You,
O'Reilly.
Is that your answer?
Is it in career?
Career.
Could it be Nylon?
Ooh, Nails? I don't know if he was there long.
I don't know. I'm simply throwing it out there.
Most penalty minutes. I think it has to be. Doesn't it have to be Terry.
It's Terry. How about Milbury?
Well, he beat me.
Come on, Ricky. Spit it out. It's on the
It's O'Reilly. It's Terry O'Reilly.
Bloody O'Reilly is correct.
There you go, Rico.
Mike did beat someone with his own shoe, which is
at the Garden.
So disrespectful.
That is disrespectful. That is disrespectful.
He was hitting Ranger fans. It was okay.
It was not okay. He went into the crowd.
I wish it was you.
Me or Andy?
No, you, David.
Why would you want him to beat me with a shoe?
Well, because you're a Rangers fan. Andy's an Islanders fan like me.
You bet. Hey, the Chicago Blackhawks all-time leading penalty minutes leader. Who is he? Surprising all-time leader.
Is it Chelios?
Soft hand Chelios is correct.
Oh, I mean, look what I do. I'm not even a hockey guy.
The Greek
I don't
god
know why they called
Chelios
him soft hands with all those penalty minutes, but that was his nickname.
Well, he was just there forever.
He was only in Chicago for 9 years. Played 26 seasons.
Unbelievable.
Never
Detroit Red Wings, all-time leader in penalty minutes.
Probert.
It is Bob Probert. Give him a ding. There you go, Ray.
David.
Amazingly, he's also in the top 10 on the Blackhawks' all-time penalty minutes. Love Bob Probert. And finally, from your Montreal Canadiens, their all-time penalty leader.
Can't be that many. Soft team.
So disrespectful.
May have mentioned him before.
May have mentioned it before, really?
Oh, yeah.
Nylon. Chris Nylon.
Knuckles Nylon is correct. Fellas, let's be careful out there. And as always, stay healthy, boys.
Terrific job, Andy from Eric. The great Andy
from
Eric.
This is what I don't understand. You listen to Andy on our show, right? Now, I mean, who knows how many people actually listen to the show? It's only 2 hours. But if I was someone like that did advertising, listening to the show, commercials, Andy from Merrick. Like, you watch some of these commercials, like, I got to watch this Corona commercial. First of all, people aren't drinking Corona because they think they can actually catch Corona from drinking the beer.
Doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about this country?
It does, but why, I mean, why am I watching commercials with Bad Bunny and Snoop talking on seashells?
Yeah, that's kind of
when
ridiculous.
You could have Andy from Merrick.
That's kind of ridiculous.
It's the worst commercial I've ever seen in my life.
My shell phone?
Yeah,
how
my shell
corny
phone.
Is that, man?
It's terrible.
It's Playa.
When you could have a spokesman like Andy from Merrick.
Exactly. Stay healthy, my friends. I mean, come on, man. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, it's terrific. Now, here's another question. How is Andy's daily call to us not sponsored?
That's another great question, Rothenberg.
That goes back to the point, like, who's listening? You know what I mean? Like, God forbid the sales department ever listens.
I mean, it's such a sponsorable segment.
I don't know how you wouldn't sponsor it.
Yeah.
It's a staple in the show.
Yeah. And it's terrific. And everybody loves it.
And it's something that we're good at.
And it's uplifting.
It makes
He's always
feel
in a good mood.
It? Plus, it makes us feel smart.
Yeah.
People get educated. Like, they can ask their buddies these questions when they
you
get
You can play
work.
Along at home.
Yeah, listen. Some things you just can't explain.
Yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Something was just brought to my attention, and I've never seen anything like this before. So, you know, RJ tells us all the time that they come out with the early spreads on the games a week out of in advance.
Yep.
The Jets-Chiefs spread is out.
What is it?
What do you think it could be?
I'm going to say it's two touchdowns. I'm going to say it's got to be, what was the line against the Bills? Was what, 13 or 12 and a half?
I'll give you an up-to-date line on the Bills. The current Jets-Bills line is 13.
13.
21.
Yeah.
21.
You said what?
It'll be 21. It'll be three touchdowns.
Oh, three touchdowns.
Yep.
The line for Jets-Chiefs is three touchdowns.
No. He's not right. You're both wrong. You both guessed too low. 22 points. Jeez.
So over three touchdowns.
Woo! 22 points.
That's house rule, man. 21 nothing, you got to get off the sticks.
Two.
That's unbelievable, man.
This is like Southern Miss against Alabama. 22?
What's the over under in that game?
They don't have the over under yet. Yeah. I guess that doesn't come out until the week of the game.
Well, because they're just planning on the Jets not scoring. They just got shut out by the Dolphins.
22?
They got to do something. They got to get rid of Adam Gase, man. There's no way they can continue
to let
this go.
I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen.
They can't let this keep going, man.
Mark my words, this is what's going to happen.
I'm listening.
He's going to end up turning over play calling duties. I'm telling you right now. That's
you think
happen.
So?
That's the next step. I promise you.
No, but they just had that meeting with all of the position coaches, and they decided that Adam Gase was the best one for the job. That happened 2 weeks ago.
No, they're ruining his reputation, I'm telling you right now.
They're ruining his reputation?
I think he's doing a pretty good job of that now.
This is going to be the CYA. Hey, listen, it's not me. Listen, Dowell Loggins calling the plays, still the same players. It's not me. You can't blame me for this one, I'm telling you.
They just need to get Adam Gase out of the building, man. I don't know why his key card still works. Like, he should not be the coach of the Jets.
22.
Like, keeping Adam Gase as your head coach is literally lighting the rest of the season on fire. You can't afford to give away an opportunity for player development. You can't. And by them coming out with a line that's 22, they're telling you the Jets are non-competitive.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at the
They don't even give the requisite effort that it takes to compete in the NFL. Why would you keep Adam Gase as your head coach? There's no good argument for it.
5.5, 3.5, 1.5, 22. it's unbelievable.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Dave. What did you expect it to be?
I didn't expect it to be 22 points, Rico.
I don't think I've ever seen a line of 22, NFL. 22?
Well, just because you've never seen it before. I mean, when was the last time we've seen a team this bad? Was it 1976?
We might not have ever seen a team this bad, Rico.
It's possible. Guys, that
we
was
might
an
not ever have seen a team
this.
The Jets might be the worst team we've ever seen in the modern day NFL. The worst. They're on pace to have the worst point differential of any team in the modern era since the merger. Worse than the 76 Buccaneers that were an expansion team.
They were an expansion team. They'd never played before.
Which is kind of what the Jets are. I mean, that's
really.
Well,
the Jets ain't played this season yet.
22. I mean, these spreads are astronomical.
Well, I love how you're surprised. I mean, their defense.
I'm surprised, Rico. I'm surprised. I did not think there would be a line where the team was a 22-point dog at some point this season. I didn't expect to see that. What they're saying is the Jets don't belong in the NFL.
Pretty much.
I mean, that's what they're saying.
Your defense gives up 31 points, and you score 12.5. I mean, you do the math. And that's 12.5 on a good day.
So what you're saying is you'll lay the 22 and take Kansas City?
Yeah, I would lay the 22.
That is insane.
Could you ever take the Jets and feel good about it? Like, I don't think you could. They're getting, 13.5?
I
had that work
movie.
Out for you.
I took them against Denver. I still like the pick. I thought they should beat Denver.
Yeah, I took them against the Colts. I said, I'll never do that again.
Right. Three turnovers in that game. You won the turnover battle. It was a pick six, and you still lost. Third-string quarterback that threw 9 career passes in the NFL.
Cross-country travel. I get it. I know you say it, but these are spreads. You don't see spreads like this. 22?
No.
You don't see
numbers like this.
No, you don't see spreads like that in the NFL.
No.
That's a college football spread. That's Clemson-Wake Forest.
They're treating us like Citadel right now.
Right?
That's what
right.
It's like.
That's exactly it.
Like Wofford football.
Oh, my gosh.
Campbell University.
I'm telling you, though.
Dave, why is Adam Gase still the head coach of this team?
Well, he's not going to be calling plays. Watch. I'm telling you right now.
But what is that going to do, though, Rico? He's still your head coach. He's still the guy.
I think Joe Douglas has given him every opportunity. Because here's the thing. Chris Johnson really had no business making this decision in the first place. But just by nature. Like, he's one of those guys that always sees the good in everything. Like, the good in people. Like, he really, like, he hopes that Adam Gase will find a way to turn this thing around. Like, he's going to hold out hope as long as humanly possible. And I think he can do that right now because you're not worried about – I think the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic and people aren't allowed to go to games has kept Adam Gase around longer than he probably would have been.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. But you can't look at the effort that team gave down in South Beach and think that Adam Gase is going to somehow rally and galvanize the troops and get them to turn this thing around like they did last year. That's just not happening this year.
No, I don't think it's happening either, but I think they want to get between Chris Johnson and the fact that I really believe that Joe Douglas, I mean, what Adam Gase, I mean, Adam Gase drove down to South Philly to go, I mean, talk Joe Douglas into taking this job. And this wasn't, I mean, Joe Douglas said no a couple different times until they gave him the 6-year deal. Like, I think Joe Douglas wants to give Adam Gase every opportunity to try to turn it around.
But you can't.
Well, he can because he's got a 6-year deal. I mean, yeah, Dave, you got.
I'm not saying Douglas can't. No one that could turn this thing around.
No, you're right. But at least he can feel good about the fact that he let, you know, Becton comes back, Mims comes back, you got Perriman back. Like, there's no more. Like, there is. He's running out of excuses. There's no more excuses. You can't explain this away anymore. Like, he's not good at this job, and he needs to be replaced. We all get that. But I think because a friendship does exist, he wants to give him every opportunity before he pulls the plug.
But he's already done that. To me, the 0-6, like, that's already happened. Joe Douglas talked about, you know, carrying momentum from the second half of last year into 2020. Clearly that didn't happen. Clearly Adam Gase has lost the team, and they're punting on the season because they cut Le'Veon Bell and they traded Steve McClendon. Like, you're not getting rid of those players if you think that there's going to be a 6-2 second half. I don't see that. So,
but I can imagine some of those conversations, though, going back and forth. It would be like, if I was Adam Gase, too, I'd be saying to Joe Douglas, like, what are we doing here? Yeah, I mean, you didn't give me much to work with.
I mean,
sure that's part of the conversation.
Well, you know what? And listen, I don't like Gase, and I don't think he should be here at this point. It's a fair conversation. Joe Douglas did not set him up for success here.
But Joe Douglas is on a different timeline than Adam Gase is. And I think we're seeing that now.
He's giving him more time.
The fact that he was willing to trade Jamal Adams and that he didn't entertain paying him before the start of the season, that to me showed you that Joe Douglas is thinking long term and he's not thinking about what's in the best short term interest of the team or what's in Adam Gase's best interest. But I think it's gotten to a point now where it's so bad and that the team is so dysfunctional. Hell, you got the coaching staff bickering in public now. Like, it's gotten to the point now that something has to happen, and I think this is the opportunity to hold Adam Gase accountable for what we've seen the last year and a half. Because you can't light the rest of the season on fire. You still got 10 games left to play. There is something to be gained out of it. You do have an opportunity for player development, and you just can't throw that away.
22. Oh, my God.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, you guys aren't surprised.
I'm surprised by it.
I really have it. All right.
You got a team that is devoid of talent, and on top of it, doesn't play hard.
Well, see, that's the thing. We don't know how devoid of talent they are because they don't play hard. That's the part I keep coming back to. We thought Miami was devoid of talent in Adam Gase's last year. Turns out they did have some talent on that team. But you won't know unless you get rid of the head coach and the guys in the locker room actually have a game plan from a coach that they believe they could have success with. Like yesterday, I'm listening to the K Show, and Buster Olney was on the K Show, and he was talking about the general manager from the Rays and how Eric Neander said that the most valuable asset or valuable resource that a team has is not the salary cap dollars, it's not the draft picks, but it's the plate appearances, it's the innings that you can use to develop your players. And that's why I keep coming back to you can't get rid of the rest of the season. You can't allow Adam Gase to let this thing spiral out of control. Because right now, it's bad. And it's only going to get worse with him as the head coach. You can't – I don't know who you elevate to the interim head coach, but to me, you gotta do something right now if you're Chris Johnson. You can't allow the status quo to continue.
Let's go to Paul in Jersey. Paul, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking the call.
You got it.
Got a quick thought that just popped in my head a few minutes ago before I called. With Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City as well as Le'Veon Bell, you think Le'Veon Bell is chirping in his ear as much as possible to not even come close to taking even an interview with the Jets?
No, Eric Bieniemy is going to have his
choice. Yeah, I don't think Eric Bieniemy is going to stop or not take the interview because of what Le'Veon Bell says about the
Jets.
Won't
he have the pick of the litter, though, this offseason?
Yes, he will.
Yeah.
Yeah, he will. And I'll say it again, man. I don't think the Jets, even if they do get the number one overall pick, I don't think it's the most attractive job.
So think about this now. Number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
Another first-round pick. Top pick of the second round. More money in the salary cap than any other team in the NFL, no matter what the cap is going to be. And you still don't think it's an attractive job.
I said I don't think it's the most attractive job. Yes.
But that's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Although I will say this, though. I mean, it would make it attractive, and I hate how it's set up. But, I mean, it's one of the few, I think, in the NFL that are set up that way. If I'm offered a job where I'm on the same footing as the GM, I mean, that's and I have the first overall pick, I mean, that could be enticing.
Or how about just taking a job where you are the guy and the GM reports to you?
Hmm. Yeah, that'd be nice too.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they got it set up in San Francisco. Seems to be ideal. Working out.
I mean, that's an ideal setup. But, I mean, you'll have options. I mean, Bienemy's probably going to be the guy for a lot of these teams. I'm sure Houston thinks that Bienemy's going to be the guy. And then,
how about the Bills OC?
He'll be a name. I think
Daboll.
Yeah. What happens with Joe Brady? I mean, he's kind of getting to that status where he's like the next young hot offensive coordinator.
Yeah, Rob Saleh, Nick Sirianni, Matt Eberflus. Like there are going to be a lot of coaching candidates. Byron Leftwich down there in Tampa. There'll be a lot of candidates on the marketplace, but it all comes down to the Jets being able to establish some kind of hierarchy within their organization in order to have some level of accountability, because right now you don't have that. For me, that's where it starts.
You think they make a phone call to the defensive coordinator, the Buccaneers at all?
Stop. Come on, Dave. Come on, man. But listen, now that we're looking at it, though, it's not like Todd Bowles forgot football. No. We're talking about them having the best defense in the NFL.
But I think Todd his failings
with the Jets is starting to feel much more like an organizational failure rather than him not being a good coach.
But some guys are just not head coaches.
And that's fair, Dave. But I don't know how to evaluate Todd Bowles as a head coach based on the time he spent with the Jets. I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility to say, you know what, maybe Todd Bowles failed because he was with a crappy organization.
I think it's fair.
That's possible.
I think it's very fair.
His defense wasn't great when he was the head coach. I think him being the head coach took away from what he does really well, which is be a defensive coordinator. It's tough to do both, man. It really is.
He's a good defensive mind.
Listen, I honestly wouldn't mind having somebody that's more of a CEO type like Joe Judge and then get the best offensive coordinator available.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind that either. Or get someone that's more concerned with the defensive side of the ball and then, you know, handpick whoever the best offensive coordinator you think is.
I wouldn't mind that either, man. But, I mean, here's the thing. After looking at what Todd Bowles is doing with Tampa, I think it's unfair to say that he's not a quality coach in this league. And I think he does deserve another shot at being a head coach.
Yeah, I don't think
so. And his defense wasn't as bad as people want to think. At the end, it was bad. But the first couple of years, Todd Bowles' defense was pretty damn good. Pretty good. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like it's much more with the organization than it is about whatever coach is in place. They got to get that part of it figured out. Well, and then Chris Johnson hiring Adam Gase didn't make the situation better. It just exacerbated the issues that they've already had as a franchise.
No, what they got to figure out is that it doesn't work when you hire the coach before you hire the GM or hire the GM. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't work. Arranged marriages don't work.
No, you're going to have
to get it. They did that with Bowles McCagnan.
Just let the general manager pick his head coach. If Joe Douglas is going to be the guy the next 4 years because you signed him to a 6-year deal, let him pick the coach and give that coach a 4-year deal. And guess
what?
If it doesn't work out, you get rid of him at the same time.
And then you're bringing two new guys
together.
There
you go. It's not that complicated to me.
If you trust Joe Douglas, you let Joe Douglas make the hire.
That's how it should be.
Of course, that's how it should be.
I mean, Chris Johnson's a great guy. He is not equipped to be making these kind of football decisions.
No,
he's not.
Not even a little bit. Let's go quickly to Dale in Pennsylvania, and then we'll get ready for Dan Graziano. Dale, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to get your take on a possible coaching tree. I was thinking maybe Jim Harbaugh, head coach. Rex Ryan is the defensive coordinator.
You mean John Harbaugh, right?
No, Jim from Michigan.
Why would you trade for that? Why would you trade for that?
From Michigan?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a trade. Michigan is a college football team.
I understand that, but he had success here with San Francisco. He groomed Kaepernick pretty well. They went to the Super Bowl, and they
do a lot worse
than
Jim Harbaugh.
Between John and I would like, if we're going to have the number one overall pick, why not try to get Tony Elliott from Clemson to come up with Trevor Lawrence? They already have the chemistry together. I think it would be a great fit.
I don't know about Jim Harbaugh being in pro football anymore. I don't. I think that there are other avenues that you can go down. Jim Harbaugh is a name that you know, but there are other quality coaches that deserve an opportunity to be a head coach. You got plenty of coaches that have shown they know what the hell they're doing in this league. I would rather try to find one of those guys than to go after Jim Harbaugh, who really hadn't done anything to impress you at Michigan since he's been there.
No.
So
they're very pedestrian.
Yeah.
And they never beat Ohio State.
I'm all set on Jim Harbaugh. You want to talk about trying to get John Harbaugh from Baltimore? There's no way that he would leave. There's no way that we'd consider trading him. But that's – I can understand John Harbaugh. We had that conversation a couple of years ago. I'm all set with Jim Harbaugh.
But why in the world would John Harbaugh leave Baltimore?
He wouldn't, Dave. That's what I just said. There's no way he would leave Baltimore. But I mean, if you want to talk about making a trade and giving up first-round draft picks, yeah. Okay, John Harbaugh, Sean Payton, those are some of the coaches that would command that type of compensation. But there's no reason for those guys to go anywhere. The Jets need to find the next up-and-coming coach and empower him, and Joe Douglas go out there and get the groceries that that guy needs to make the meal. That's what needs to happen. That's how it should happen. Joe Douglas as the general manager, the head coach reporting to him, so on and so forth. There's a clear chain of command within the organization. That way you have some functionality. Stop trying to be outside of the box and do things in an unconventional way. If you're the Jets, just go with the standard structure, the standard hierarchy that most NFL teams have, and see if that works.
Do you trust that?
Let's try that.
And that it will? But do you trust it?
I would rather them do that than continue to do what they've been doing.
No, I'm saying,
what they've been doing
hasn't been working. Do you trust them to do the right thing? Do you trust them to do the right thing?
No, I don't. No.
Right. Exactly.
No, absolutely not.
And that's why every Jets fan is on pins and needles as we go into this offseason.
Yeah, and if I'm Trevor Lawrence, I'm scared as hell of being drafted by the Jets.
Yeah, I would be as well.
Yeah.
All right, Rick, you ready for the read?
For what read, David?
Your favorite read from yesterday.
Oh, please, you're doing it again? Yeah, please, yeah. I'm ready. I'm so ready.
You sure?
Oh, I love this read.
Okay. Here we go. Champion versus champion, UFC 254, when Khabib takes on Gaethje coming this Saturday, October 24th, at a special start time of 2 p.m. on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. Khabib Nurmagomedov. That's not... No, let me try it again. Khabib Nurmag... It's not an easy name. Khabib Nurmagomedov. That might have been it.
No, that's not it.
Chris, Nurmagomedov?
No, it's not it.
Well, what is it then?
They don't have it phonetically there for you?
They do. It looks to me like Nurmagomedov.
No, I think that is it, Dave.
Yeah. See, he's just being a bad guy. Khabib Nurmagomedov looks to add another victory to his perfect. He's perfect, Nurmagomedov. He's undefeated. 28-0 record when he defends his title against interim champ Justin Gaethje. UFC 254. Exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99. Or sign up now to get UFC 254 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $84.98. Visit ESPNPlus.com/PPV for more details. Nurmagomedov. It's sensational. Dan Graziano
well
also
done,
sensational.
Dave.
Nurmagomedov. It took a couple of times, but we're finally there. And you're a bad guy. Because I finally got it right. You're like, no, that's not it. You wanted me to just continue
sound
to try.
Right still to me, but it still doesn't sound right to
well,
me.
Well, how do you think it is?
I'm not looking at it. I can't see. I'm not looking at the actual name.
But right you now. Know the name. You're familiar
I'm
with the fighter.
I'm trying not to press too many buttons. My iPad just went rogue on me.
Nurmagomedov. I think that's it. I'm pretty confident. Bring on a dear friend of the program, the great Dan Graziano. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
We are well. Something just came across the screen. It was mentioned to me by one of the producers, and it's not really a question, Dan. It's just it's a number, and I've never seen anything like it before. I'm sure you don't know it, and I'd like to bring it to your attention as well. Guess what the Jets-Chiefs spread is for next weekend. Not for this weekend, Jets-Chiefs next weekend. Take a guess at what the number is.
I think I saw some reference to this. Is it like 22?
It's 22. Dan, have you in your life, have you ever seen anything like that?
I mean, college games, right? Where, like, you know, they're playing, like, the homecoming game. It's a whole match against the non-conference opponent. Yeah, you see that. But, no, in the NFL, it should not be like that. There should not be that significant a difference in the perception of one team versus another. And yet, you got to think about it, right? Like, if you were going to play that game, like, I don't know which side of that to take, which I guess is the point.
No, you lay the 22. You know exactly which side to take. You lay the 22.
Lay in the 22. That's a lot of points. Somebody,
a lot of points.
Somebody has an accidental, like, falls backwards into the end zone late, and all of a sudden, you know, they win by 21.
Well, if Adam Gase is still the head coach, Dan, you ain't got to worry about the Jets trying that hard.
That's why I don't bet the games. But
you
yeah,
couldn't score against the Dolphins.
Crazy, couldn't score against them. Dolphins are better than you think, but no, they're not the Chiefs. That's correct.
No, they're not the Chiefs. So where do they go, Dan? I mean, how much of this is the relationship between Joe Douglas and Adam Gase is that, you know, they just don't have another option. Like, Greg Williams is not a great option to be the interim head coach. Like, where do the Jets go from here?
Yeah, it's a problem, right? Like, 2 years ago in Cleveland, when, like, it was Hugh Jackson fighting with Todd Haley and all this stuff, and Greg Williams was kind of keeping quiet and doing his thing. So they got everybody else out of there and made him the interim. But now, like, Greg is kind of involved in the whole mess. So, yeah, I think there's a decent chance that Gase finishes out the year and then they make the change in the offseason. But you're right. I mean, if they don't feel good about the interim option, that is the kind of thing that sometimes does keep a coach employed longer than, well, let's say longer than the fans would prefer in a case like this.
Dan, where's Chris Johnson on all this? Because he can't be pleased with the effort that he's getting from his team. It's one thing not to have the requisite talent to compete in this league, but the Jets aren't competing for a lack of effort.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing where if you're Christopher Johnson, like you're in the building, you got to get a sense of that. I mean, I don't, you know, if he feels like that's the case and he wants to.
How could he not feel that's the case, Dan, after watching what we watched in Miami?
I got to tell you, like, I mean, sometimes you'll hear people say that's not what I'm seeing, and maybe it's not what you want to see, but I don't want to speak for him, right? Like, so what are you doing if you make a firing? You're trying to send a message. You're trying to light a fire under your team. You're trying to just, you know, get a guy out of there you don't like. I don't think there's any indication that there's a bad personal relationship between Gase and ownership, so you can probably rule that out. And I don't know how Christopher Johnson feels about his team right now. It's obviously, there's no way to feel good about it, but in terms of effort, do you feel like the guys are giving it their all? I mean, that's a heavy accusation to throw around, if it's the case, and you really believe that as an owner, then obviously something drastic should be done. But right now, you know, it's Wednesday. They're not doing it this week.
Dan Graziano with us here, 98.7 ESPN. We'll stay in the AFC East, but switch to a team that seems much, much more functional right now, Dan. That's the Miami Dolphins. So
yeah.
Do you like the move to Tua now? And what do you expect from Tua when he takes over quarterback in 2 weeks? Because they're on a bye this week.
So what I'll say about this move is this. Brian Flores is there, and he has the pulse of his locker room. And I go back to last year. Last year, remember the story with the Dolphins last year was, are they tanking? Are they trying to lose games on purpose? Which is crazy, but they weren't. And Flores had Josh Rosen playing quarterback, right? Because it was like, hey, let's take a look at Rosen. Didn't cost us anything. Maybe he's the guy for the future. We'll find out. No harm done if he's not. They switched to Ryan Fitzpatrick. And when I asked people there why they did that, the answer was it was so clear in practice that Fitzpatrick was getting everything better and handling everything better that there's no way Flores could have sold the message to his team, to his players, that we're not tanking if they didn't make that move. So fast forward. If you're Brian Flores and you're telling your team, we want to win now, we're a contender, we're a game out of first place, we think we're good enough to beat the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots, you cannot make a move like this unless it's obvious to everyone that Tua is ready and that Tua is going to be the guy and that Tua offers something in terms of ceiling, in terms of upside, that Fitzpatrick does not. So knowing all that, I think I do like the move because it tells me that they really believe that this young man is ready. I think we're expecting him to be exciting. I think it's great to see. I mean, no offense to Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's had an outstanding career in his own right. But this is the future for the Dolphins, and I think people are excited to see him play.
Dan Graziano joins us here in the show. Let's stay in the AFC East for one last question. So last couple games for Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills haven't been great. Patriots, it could be, you know, too many days off, not practicing, COVID. You know, Cam was a little bit rusty, but I mean, they end up losing to Denver. You still feel like it's Buffalo's division to win, or do you think, you know, the Patriots could be the team that ends up winning the AFC East?
I think it could be either. I think the problem with Josh Allen is that it's too early in his career to expect week-to-week consistency, and certainly at the level he played the first month of the season. I mean, that wasn't sustainable. So I think you live with ups and downs, and you live with volatility when you have Josh Allen, but the group around him is good enough to pull it off. Patriots, if you believe in the Patriots right now, you're just believing in Belichick and his ability to get them there. And Cam Newton, too, who made the playoffs, I think, five times in Carolina. So there's not a lot of evidence to help you support your pick of the Patriots, if that's your pick. But it's a matter of, you know, if Bill Belichick doesn't make the playoffs, I'm going to need to see that to believe it. And I don't think it's right to rule out Miami. I mean, obviously they beat up on the Jets, but the week before they beat up on the 49ers. And I know they've had injuries there, but the 49ers are a good team, and they went out there and beat them pretty badly. So I think they're lurking, and I think if somebody doesn't run away with it, then assuming the young man plays well,
I think they're a better team than you think. They spent more money on player acquisition this offseason than any other team. It wouldn't be too surprising if they turned out to be good sooner than we expected.
Dan, how active will the Patriots be as we get closer to the deadline?
Well, they'll always try, right? So yep. they have needs, and you know they're making their calls. It wouldn't be for lack of effort. They traded a second-round pick last year for Mohamed Sanu, and that really didn't work out well. And I think there's people there that are kind of still stung by that experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are you going to go out and make a move like that again? You better be real sure about whoever you're bringing in, right?
Didn't Atlanta put Julio Jones out there?
Well, Atlanta's not – we don't know who they're putting out there. I think there's thought around the league that's a guy that could be available.
Yeah, he and Matt Ryan.
To go fire sale. Ryan's contract not tradable during the season. They might be able to do it in the offseason, but it would crush the Falcons cap-wise to trade him during the season. Mm-hmm. But Julio less so, and, you know, that's a big decision that's going to be made by Falcons ownership, if anyone, because they don't have a GM or a coach. But, A.J. Green, you know, there's guys in Houston on the last years of their contracts like, you know, Will Fuller and Kenny Stills, you know, but I don't know how many more receivers you want to take away from Deshaun Watson. So the point is, if there's a guy out there, and there's going to be competition, there's other teams looking for a receiver. If there's a guy out there you feel great about, then definitely bring him in. But I don't think, based on last year's experience, that the Patriots are overly eager to just do pick for player again because it didn't work out last time.
Mm-hmm. Dan Graziano with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Last one for me, and it's on the Giants, and they're 1-5. I don't think anybody's going to argue, Dan. They're a good football team, but they have a big game on tomorrow night. And I guess I'll ask you, like, do you expect the Giants to win this game and go to 2-5 and maybe share a tie of first place at the end of the week?
I do not, but the Eagles are banged up. I mean, there's a path to it for them. If you can do enough on defense to hold Wentz and all the backups down, you can maybe steal one at the end. But it's hard for me to pick the Giants. I mean, last 3-plus years, no team's lost more games, and it's not that close, actually. So I find it difficult to pick them in general. I think that they won on Sunday, Joe Judge has them playing hard for him. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And the defense is, you know, they play tough. I think they're still obviously short personnel-wise. I just don't. I mean, other than against the Cowboys, I just don't see how they score. And everybody scores against the Cowboys.
Dan Graziano joins us here on the show. Dan, last one from me. What you saw in that Tampa Green Bay game, was that just was that just a bump in the road for Green Bay? Because that reminded me. I mean, Tampa's a real physical team, and you know the last time we saw Green Bay in one of those kind of games, they got dismantled by San Francisco. Should we be worried about Green Bay, or is this just a bump?
Yeah, I think bump in the road. The San Francisco game in the NFC Championship game, they were dominated physically in the run game, and San Francisco just pounded it. I think what happened on Sunday, they were up 10-0 in the second quarter, and Rodgers throws two interceptions in the span of three throws. One's returned for a touchdown. The other one's returned to the 2-yard line. This is Haley's Comet. I mean, it had been almost 3 full calendar years since Aaron Rodgers had thrown two interceptions in the same game. I think the Packers were stunned. The Buccaneers did what good teams do. They took advantage of their opportunity and ran right through the hole that was created. But I don't think that the Packers are sitting there thinking, oh, we're in trouble because we're now expecting Aaron Rodgers to throw two interceptions a game. I think this is an easy one for them to brush off, and they'll get back to doing what they're doing this week.
Dan, what's going on down in Dallas, man? I mean, you got players coming out and saying that they're unprepared. Is it a coaching issue, or is it bigger than that down there in Dallas?
Well, obviously it's bigger than that because, you know, they've sort of been an underachieving group for a while now. So, look, the offensive line is down 4 guys, right, once Zach Martin goes out of the game the other night. This is no small thing.
Didn't Brandon Knight have knee surgery, too? The backup had knee surgery?
Yeah. So any team dealing with this kind of offensive line issues is going to struggle. And the Cowboys, this was their DNA forever, right? Like the whole thing worked off of this dominant offensive line. So they're obviously not themselves. But, you know, look, I mean, you never heard reports of unnamed players criticizing the coaches. No matter what you think of Jason Garrett, this literally never, ever happened while he was their coach. And he was their coach for a very long time. So people are frustrated there, and there's no question about it. And you know, it's clear that Mike McCarthy and his coaching staff haven't I feel like I'm the king of understatement, haven't done a lot to inspire greatness there in the locker room. So I think they expected to even be able to handle the injury trouble that they've had, and they're just non-competitive at home in a Monday night game against the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, that's a bad place to be, even though, as I said, they are in first place. It's a very strange year, but I don't think the Cowboys have the team that they thought they had or even close to it.
All right, Dan, we appreciate it. Have a good week. We'll check in with you next Wednesday.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, appreciate that. Of course, Dan Graziano. Now, today on ESPN Daily, celebrate 1 year of the podcast with a story for the ages, a mascot battle as the Big Ten college conferences prepare for kickoff. Hear the real story of how Ohio State's Brutus Buckeye once got ambushed by Ohio University's Rufus the Bobcat on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast.
Better about your life.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself.
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
And before we start Knobservations, I want to remind you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 at ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go, Rick. We go to Knobservations.
All right, here we go, fellas. Dave, quickly as you can, give me weather.
The weather foggy. Outside is weather.
Very foggy, not wonderful. It's going to get warm later this afternoon, up to 70 degrees, wow. But you're not going to see a lot of sun today. Go.
Okay, here we go. So did this happen in Florida? It's a bit of a cautionary tale. This is why you do not get into bar fights.
cautionary tale.
God knows what could happen. So this is a 24-year-old man arrested after an alleged fight outside a bar around 11 p.m. 24-year-old man against a 20-year-old man. This fight began after he and this man were in an argument inside of the bar, spilled out into the parking lot, back and forth, physical. Man ran into a nearby house before guy started tossing rocks at the home's window and demanded that the man come out and fight. Meanwhile, as this was going on, another fight breaks out. And what does this guy decide to do? Punches the man in the face and then bites off his nose.
What?
Wow.
Bites off most of his nose.
Off wow. the nose?
Off the nose. Yeah. Victim required surgery to reconstruct his nose. Mostly gone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is why
that's a hell of a 1-2.
Yeah.
The punch with the, with the bite his nose off.
You didn't see that two-piece coming.
that's the Mike Tyson school of fighting. Boy, it could be Florida. I'm going to say no, but I don't have any conviction with this. Bars are totally open in Florida, though. I'm going to say not Florida, because this country is crazy, and I've seen that over the last couple of months, and I'm going to say not Florida.
Yeah, I'm with Dave on this one. It sounds like West Virginia, Alabama, something like that. It doesn't sound like Florida.
Santee, Florida, not Florida.
Were bath salts involved?
No bath salts.
I'll say not Florida then.
You guys are correct. This is Iowa.
Yeah. Iowa. Okay, there you go. Yeah.
All right, quickly before we go, Knob.
Like Field of Dreams.
Listen, Knob of the Week, and it's a hand down. It's one Cassandra Margaret DiPietro for what she did to me last night. It was a moment where she's a knob in one sense, but also that those special little moments, Dave, where you realize you found your person. The amount of love. I just get finished changing a blowout. Like, Rocco, this is like his first blowout. It's everywhere. I mean, this is just, it's all over the place. So I clean this up. I'm doing her solid. And then my second toe is longer than my big toe, so I lack spatial awareness when it comes to the second toe. So as I'm wheeling around with this big, giant, dirty diaper, I managed to swing across and smash my second toe off the chair. Oh. I'm not going to get an x-ray.
And there's nothing worse than a toe stubbing.
So I go down in a heap, but there's blood, the whole thing, and I'm holding my foot like, oh my, and she looks at me, and with a straight face, she goes, hopefully it's just a cramp, Rick.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah, but savagery.
I don't think that's an observation. I think that's brilliant.
It's well played by Cass.
Yeah, well, but that's not nice. I just changed the blowout, and you're going to pull a Tony Romo on me.
Yeah, but it's well done. It's well played. It's straight-faced. It's got all the makings of one of the great comments that we've seen.
Savage. I love it.
Hopefully, it's just a cramp. I love that. That's so a great good. Line.
So good.
Good for her. And sadly, that's it for an observations, huh?
There you go, boys.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.